brighter than the other, and that to have some relationship.
No, I didn't get that. The teacher and the student?
The teacher and the student are on the same level, except one is just brighter than the other one, perhaps. Right? There's no gradation of where we can't reach, and that to have relationship, you have to sort of recognise that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the difficulty that there seems to be, say, with all of us right now, to have relationship with what's going to be said.
If you don't speak the same language, how do you communicate with each other? I mean, I'm talking about ordinary communication. If you don't speak the same language, you can't communicate with each other. Correct? So now, translate it here. If you go to a spiritual teacher and he says something which means something very different to you, there's no communication. The same thing can be said even of silent non-verbal communication. If you are one looking for something and the teacher is looking for something else, even the two of you looking at each other may lead to all sorts of complications. I'll give you a rather shocking example. Sometimes these shocking examples are more telling than telling something more non-shocking. A lady was foreign. Lady was sitting on the beach in South India, in Madras. And a young man, very probably robust, nice, probably slightly educated, he was pacing up and down along the beach. It's quite possible that he turned to look at her. You do that. You're walking along the beach and you turn to look at somebody. Whoever is walking past you. He probably turned to look at her. It's possible that there was a spark of admiration in his eyes. Right? He turned to look at her, and there might have been a spark of, or the way he looked at her made her feel that he is looking at her with admiration or affection. She is a very highly evolved spiritual person. And so she thinks, oh, poor thing. Why should he have such unworthy ideas? And so she follows him. And he comes closer, since you are looking at me and since your eyes are following me, well, he comes and sits in front of her, and she also looks at him very compassionately, sort of radiating message of purity, spirituality and higher transcendentalism. She's then the next thing he says, why not? What are we waiting for? This thing actually happened. I'm not bluffing. I'm not spinning a story out of... I don't have such fertile imagination. It actually happened. Now, what is wrong in this? Is there anything... Take the whole thing apart, step by step, each step was right. She was sitting on under a tree or on a log of wood, and this young man happened to walk past her. Man or woman, it doesn't matter, wouldn't you, if you were sitting there, I would just look at him and say, good evening. If she was there, I would still say, good evening. No problem. Just ordinary courtesy. Probably you smile. Why don't you? Why should you weep?
It's very difficult.
Ah, so... these two were probably... I'm not judging. These two were probably on different levels. And there is no communication. He is looking for something and she is looking for something else. I go back and repeat this. Even in the case of verbal communication, unless the student and the teacher are not on the same platform, the communication does not take place. There is monstrous misunderstanding, correct? We are all familiar with that. We have had it. I didn't mean it, and I mean it, I meant it. Or you remind me after having said something and I have misunderstood you, you say, no, but I also said this. I didn't get that. I ignored it. And in the case of non-verbal communication, it is even more important. I have a feeling that that the two are always together, verbal and non-verbal communication. Right? There is nothing called verbal communication and there is nothing called non-verbal communication. Though it is possible that there may be non-verbal communication without verbal communication, there is no independent verbal communication. In verbal communication, non-verbal communication is implied. You cannot have verbal communication without non-verbal communication. Mm-hmm. So, if I have to do Upanishad, I must find the teacher with whom I can have this rapport. He is enlightened and I am seeking enlightenment. We are on the same platform in the sense that we speak the same language. We have the same aspirations. We have the same goals, if one wants to use the word goal. He has the answer and I have the question. He has the answer and I have the question. So that without me his answer is useless, without him my question is useless. They fit. The nut and the bolt. In any other way, there will be not merely misunderstanding, but the whole thing is a fiasco. A misunderstanding that may be disastrous to the student, or he maybe even to the teacher. Because if the student completely and thoroughly misunderstands the teacher, he might go and tell other students of the same teacher, this is the master is teaching. And cause a lot of damage. It is only in order to figure that out that the ancient masters, you don't have them at present, the ancient masters, to use a simple word, tested the students. Pass them through some kind of a test or not, something like that. Are you really interested in this? So, give them a bar of chocolate. If you are satisfied with that, bye-bye. You came only for that. It's not easy. Yeah? There is a very funny story told, and I believe this is also true. The first story is, I am the witness to it. The second story is, I've heard. There was a very great devotee. Most of you have heard the name Tukaram. And it seems he was fond of holding all-night chanting sessions. Sometimes he would start at about 8 o'clock or so and go on Hare Rama, Hare Rama throughout the night. He had his own mantra, his own chanting throughout the night. Concluded at about 5 o'clock, 4 or 5 o'clock. He had gone to a new village for the first time, and inspired the inhabitants to organize one of these all-night chanting sessions. They had come to the temple, and the session started, 8 o'clock it started, like our the Shivratri in the temple. At about 10 or 11 o'clock, the mothers with the little children, they walked out. At about 11 or 12, the more aged members walked out. And a little later, all the youngsters walked out, leaving just a few middle-aged men and women. But this man wasn't conscious of the audience at all. He had his eyes closed and went on chanting. And a few others who were sitting right in front, they were waiting. Open his eyes. He didn't open his eyes. That was also good. He wouldn't notice when we left. So about 2 o'clock or so, they also got up and left. And about 4:30 or 5, the holy man concluded his chanting and he opened his eyes. There was only one young man sitting in front of him. He got up and with great love and affection and admiration, he embraced him. He said, "Ah, there were so many. When I started, you are the only good devotee in the whole place. God bless you." He said, "He was a small boy, 8 years old. He said, The carpet belongs to my mother. If I went home without the carpet, she will beat me. Please step off the carpet so I can take it away." So, this poor boy kept vigil the whole night and probably sang or at least heard the whole thing. But he was not there at all. He was only worried about the carpet, and the mother would hit me if I go home without the carpet. Because communication is important. Verbal or non-verbal. And another very important reason why all gurus do not suit all seekers. It's a very funny thing. You might find somebody boring or uninteresting, terrible. But if you ask someone else, they say, "Oh my God, he." Just he, I go and sit in front of him, he blows my mind. And you may have some other holy man, and he is the thing, Jesus Christ or Buddha. And the other person says, ah, none, none. It's again the nut and bolt. If someone is considered the guru of the entire world, all 12,999,999 people of Australia are followers of this guru, you go to him, you sit in front of him, he doesn't make the least impression upon you, he is not your guru. That's all. Because there is no communication. Maybe because there is something wrong with you, or maybe there is something wrong with him, or maybe there is nothing wrong with either. It's just wrong nut and right bolt. If there is no communication, leave him alone, that's all. It's none of your business. But it is when that communication happens, it's something marvelous.
Someone who's clear is your lack of clarity, rather than that you've both got the same aspirations, even, you know?
No. Lack of clarity is not possible if you're not talking the same language.
Lack of clarity isn't possible if you're not talking the same
language. Indiru, okay? Indiru, என்ன சொல்ற என்ன இந்த மாதிரி கழுங்கு இந்த மாதிரி கழுங்கு
என்ன
வாட் யூ கால் கிளாரிட்டி இஸ் பார்ன் ஆஃப் திஸ் கம்யூனிகேஷன் ஆர் பார்ன் ஆஃப் திஸ் சேம் பிளாட்ஃபார்ம்னஸ் ஹார்மனி. If you are on the same wavelength, then the message is neatly communicated. And that is what you call clarity. Is that right?
If I hear what you say, really, everybody
hears what everybody else says.
Sorry?
Everybody hears what everybody else says. No, this is quite simple. You come and sit here and read one page from any of these books, slowly, word by word. Then a minute later, not even afterwards, a minute later, hand out a piece of paper and ask them to write what they heard. It's completely different. Therefore, it is not the fault of hearing. It is where you are. What you want is another, slightly complicating it. Where you are. Because you may even want the truth of whatever is being expressed. Supposing we have a talk, build Upanishads, Katha Upanishad. It is possible that all of them might have come in order to listen to this Katha Upanishad. We all want it. Correct? So that it seems as though the goal is identical. What did you come to do here? I want to listen to Katha Upanishad. What did you come for? I want to learn more about Katha Upanishad. So, everybody has come in order to listen to a discourse on Katha Upanishad. The goal seems to be identical. But what you are is different from one person to the other.
You said where you are.
Where you are, what you are, what is
what
it?
You are?
What you are, where you are. What you are is where you are, there's no difference. What you are is where you are.
Swamiji, quite often when you've talked about the relationship, guru-disciple relationship, you've mentioned the tuning yourself to the same wavelength. If you find that there is a sort of communication, you still have the student still has to.
Turn it on then, that's all. If you have the same, if you are on the same wavelength, all that you need is to switch it on. Switch it on in the sense that as a student I come to you and I have been doing some other work. And now I come here, I switch the attention on. There's no more problem. But that's oversimplifying the whole story. It's not as simple as that. To switch it on and to keep it steadily there, it's not so simple.
Do you think there's sometimes people who are on the wavelength than others, sort of people have flashes of
that's it.
Communication?
That's it.
Drops a bit
that's it.
Days,
that is like any receiving set when you try to find a shortwave station. It keeps changing. It's clipping. So you may be on the same wavelength normally. These things have no meaning. Yes, you may be on the same wavelength. You go to this man and start asking or listening. Ah, that's good. That's right. Ah, it hits you. Hits the bullseye. That's very good, nice. Then he goes around, because he is not your carbon copy, he is somebody else. So a little later he says something which your mind does not like, which your emotion does not like, which something else does not like. And suddenly the needle slips. You're not interested.
Is that the only reason?
Possibly. I mean, given all the other conditions, we have gone through all the other conditions, that you are on the same wavelength, you are so and so, you are attentive, and your goals are same, your natures are same. If your goals are same, and if your nature also is the same as the teacher, not exactly, correct? There are some differences. At least, as I said, he is enlightened and you are not. Everything else is correct, but he is enlightened and you are not. You are seeking enlightenment. So, that way there is communication. But since you are not enlightened, it means there are other element factors also working in you. Other elements also are working in you. So what happens is, as long as this teacher tells you something which appeals to you, not necessarily edifying or pleasant, but something which appeals to you. Yes, that's right. That's right. You go on saying that's right. That's right. That is where the attunement is correct. That's right, that's right, that's right. And then he says something which stirs up something else in you. Oh, no, that's his point of view. And then you are slipped out. Between no two people can there be 100% harmony. You cannot agree with anyone 100%. That would make God a typist using carbon copies. He doesn't use them. He has no carbon copy. And he has no, he doesn't have a typewriter or a printing machine. Each one is individually fashioned. And so, where you are is what you are. Where you are on this ladder of evolution determines what you are. And so even though you and the teacher may be on the same platform, you have one toe dangling down below. Something is somewhere else. You have some other interest. And there are some other factors which operate in you, in the hearer, in the listener, in the student. So, as long as this teacher doesn't upset that, things go very well, beautifully well. You are precisely on the same wavelength. I mean, this is already rare. What I am saying is already rare. You are precisely on the same wavelength and everything goes on fine. Till he touches that sensitive spot where you have some difference. If you are wise, you would receive that. Though the reception there is not as smooth as the other one, as the rest of it. Gives you a jolt. Though it gives you a jolt, if you are wise, you would still receive it for future chewing, assimilating. But if you are unwise, the whole attention is blown, destroyed. The communication is lost. And then you'll discover something very funny. It may not happen so dramatically and so rebelliously, revoltingly, as I'm painting. It may be a very slight thing. And I've even seen this. Suddenly there is a blackout for a couple of minutes or a couple of seconds. Or the mind commences a sort of internal dialogue. But did I hear it right? Did I hear him say right? You know, sometimes I don't know, some noise, something, you are talking within yourself. Sometimes, you know, I don't listen very carefully. I should hereafter listen very carefully. Did he really say that? Maybe I have misunderstood. He probably only said, "Oh, don't take coffee." Only three words. So you get into that, and then this is something which has intrigued me all the time for a long, long time. I don't know if one here. There is Terence is not here. No. When there is an accident, serious accident, how is it that you forget or you don't remember the impact that caused the injury? Is something I've never understood. You see, supposing I throw this at you. You see this. And you see me raising my arm, you see me hurling this object, and you see it almost coming right up to your nose. And this is a minor thing. And In this minor incident, you are likely to remember every inch of it, all the way through. But supposing it's a major accident, why didn't he remember a bus coming heading direct towards him, and the bus hitting him, and him falling, then losing consciousness? So, when you lose consciousness on certain occasions, it looks as though that this mechanism of amnesia has a retrospective action. Anything that is shocking, so profoundly shocking, has a retrospective effect. So, if instead of saying, if we had merely said, don't take coffee, or supposing you are addicted to coffee, or addicted to marijuana, and he says, you shouldn't do that. If he makes a shocking statement, you go off at a tangent at that point. But later, you don't remember this thing at all. This amnesia has had a retrospective effect. You go back and that's wiped out, so that later he might tell you, or somebody else might tell you, you know, if you're still smoking marijuana, so, but you know, our teacher said you shouldn't. Where? When did he tell? You were there? No, he didn't. You, not that you are bluffing, but that shock or this inner resistance, when it is so powerful, wipes out the whole thing. How does it happen? So, this is the essence. This is the essence of communication. That first of all, you have to be on the same platform, on the same wavelength. And if your equipment is by about the same as the teacher's equipment, minus one thing, he is enlightened, you are a seeker. You are a seeker after enlightenment, the same thing. He is there, you want to get there. And then there should be this total and perfect affection and love. Then you are prepared to take everything. Without any resistance. If there is some resistance somewhere, something which he does or which he says is capable of shocking you, communication is lost. Immediately. This is true of even human, ordinary human relationship, but it is extremely and extraordinarily important in the case of spiritual relationship. Otherwise, the whole thing is a washout. If it is there, then they say, what is it? Lessons from Brooks and... Do you know? Somebody's... some famous English poets. You can learn lessons from running Brooks.
Oh. Hmm? Sermons from stones.
Sermons from stones and lessons from running Brooks.
Books from the running Brooks.
Hmm? Books from the running Brooks. If you have...
Shakespeare,
is it? Time. So, if you have the ability to tune yourself, then you can learn from everything.
My question might be a little deep. But last Tuesday at the TS, was unfinished. The answer was unfinished. And I thought about it. So I finished it myself, and I'm not quite sure whether I finished it correctly. So, when I asked, were the cells the body of God? And he said, yes. And I said, the heart and the mind? And he said, yes. And then, of course, you broke into laughter. And because of the company there, I didn't want to pursue it. All right, but this company is different. So I thought about it, and I thought, obviously, you either meant the penis or the bowel. And so, who would want to belong to these organs? And I thought about it, and I thought, well, there'd be nothing wrong in that either, because there would be no evacuation if it's God, because... and if it was the penis, all right, well, it would only be creation, and creation's beautiful. So what would be wrong in being those portions of the body matter?
Okay, no problem. No problem at all.
No, but you stop there and you just laugh.
Because there is usually, when we think of, let's say, reincarnation, or when we contemplate the past incarnations, or what position or that sort of thing, we would like to have or be, we always want the top. Nobody wants the bottom. I'm not only referring to the human or divine anatomy, but in a society, who wants to be the slave? Would you like to reincarnate as an African slave in South America?
Yes.
That's the point. So, when we think of ourselves being cells in the body of God, we don't regard that body as a body like ours. Mm-hmm. It's a cosmic body in which there are no parts. And is it possible that all of us have different functions? Possible. But we are not aware of it as being different. This is very much like the story of reincarnation. It is quite possible that on account of something that I do or think or say or what have you, I might take birth again as a monkey or as a dog. As a dog, I wouldn't be aware of anything other than being a dog. Observe very carefully now. And from now you must be very absolutely with me. If suddenly I take birth as a dog, I know of nothing but being a dog. That is what it is to be a cell in the body of God. Can you be, just be what God made you, how God made you? That statement is absurd for a very simple reason, that you have no choice. You cannot be otherwise. But there is an inner longing to be something else. This is the stupid thing idiotic thing that distinguishes the human being from the other beings. We don't know what the other beings are thinking, whether they are also thinking that, good to God, I were a human being. But looking at them, one senses that it is not there. Can we also be cells in the body of God? Whatever that means, to just be that cell in the body of God, without even wishing to be different. When we are talking about bee, probably we can think of this honeybee. No honeybee ever competes with something else or aspires to be a queen bee. Is that possible? Then you're free. It doesn't matter in which part, of which part you are a cell. He who knows that the entire universe is nothing but the body of God and every particle in it, including this little particle called the earth, is but a cell in this cosmic body of God, he has no aspirations whatsoever. He does, he lives, and he does what has to be done, because it has to be done. But there is no aspiration, there is no ambition, there is no desire, there is no craving.